Because I really honestly believe I don't understand how anybody thinks one actor is in competition with another. It's completely unique DNA. Human beings are just like unbelievably different. There's no such thing. Unless it's an utter doppelganger of me. You know, you can say like, okay, this actor, he and I guess we're sort of the same casting. But I feel like as an actor, you're in competition with yourself. It's never anybody else at all. And I think that's such a waste of time.
This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is Adam Shartoff, your host of FilmWax Radio, episode number 258. You were listening in that opening clip to my friend Robert Longstreet, the actor. Once you know Robert, there's no unknowing Robert. Once you have met him, there's no unmeeting him. Once you're in his world, lucky or not, you're there. And you're part of his story. You're part of history. Yeah, that's right. No, Robert is a really funny guy. He's a lot of fun, unpredictable, but, you know, real deal. He's not only a very, very, very dedicated and talented actor, but he's also a real, he's the real thing. He's Menschkeit, as we like to call it in the Jewish business. And it was a real pleasure to sit with Robert Longstreet. Now, here are the circumstances, okay? First of all, I've known Robert, I don't know, the 3 or 4 years now. I met Robert. Now, see, I can't remember if the film was Septian or it was Catechism Cataclysm. They're both really crazy comedies with Robert, like, just creating these absurd characters that are unforgettable. But I can't remember which one. Whatever one was at the BAM Cinema Fest and was in the parking lot, the BAM parking lot, they screened it. So as part of it, it was also considered a co-op Rooftop Film / BAM Cinema Fest screening. And I introduced myself, and then we were hanging out, and we had a lot of laughs that night. I kind of think it was Septian, because I remember Honor being there, too, but it's all a fog now, so it doesn't really matter. Anyway, the point of the matter is, since that time, I've always liked it. And Robert, unfortunately, I would only run into him once in a while, probably at South by Southwest or something, because he lives in L.A., and so we'd, you know, maybe run into each other somewhere, but I have not seen him a lot over the years. So anyway, I have this opportunity. Here's the idea for this episode. I wanted to go to the set of an independent film shooting, and I went to my friend Michael Taylor, who is an editor, and he said, you should come to the set of The Missing Girl, which is shooting in New London, Connecticut. And this was early last summer. And so I went there and I interviewed a bunch of people tied with the project, including Michael Taylor, the editor, including the director, including the producer, and on a few of the actors. So one of the actors, of course, on the movie was Robert. Anyway, the point is that rather than wait another bunch of months, or I'm going to start playing some of these episodes. But the idea was, especially when we get down to my conversations with the director and the producer of the film, The Missing Girl, is that we're going to find out. We'll check in with those guys and find out how it's going. What festival they're going to premiere at, what distribution deal they're going to take, and all that. So we'll follow the lifeline of this movie. And it comes up in my conversation in this episode with Robert, who is the star of this film. He's, or, you know, one of the leads of the film. So I went to New London a few months ago. I interviewed Robert there. It was late. We kept pushing a bit back. And finally, at the end of the day, after he had been consuming massive quantities of coffee, we sat, and I was, you know, needed to get back to New York City. I had to drive back yet. I remember getting in, I think, at 3 in the morning or 4 in the morning or something like that, crazy, because I stayed talking to Robert till like 12. I don't even know. We ended up talking way into the night. This is the product of that conversation, and we had a really nice time, and, you know, he's doesn't censor himself very much. But he did ask me to cut out a couple of things, I think self-consciously. I'm not really doing it, so he's just super self-conscious about coming off like a, you know, I don't know, like a jerk. He's not. And he may know that he has talent, but he does not have an ego. And so It's one of the reasons I dig him. And so I hope Robert's listening. I know he's listening to this intro, in fact. So you know, Robert, that if you're feeling super strongly, I guess I could go back in and edit it. But I think we're in good shape here. Anything you say that might come off as being, I don't know, a little arrogant, trust me, it was not delivered that way by any means. Trust me. So this is Robert. So we met during Septian. When it was screening in Brooklyn, we became friendly around the time of that and Cataclysm, those two films. Go check out Robert in those. He's been in tons more films since then. He was in Take Shelter. He was in This Is Martin Bonner. He was in Ain't Them Body Saints. I'm naming, you know, films where people from these films have been on the show. I mean, you know, he's been in, there are people from all these films have been on the Ping Pong Summer, an unforgettable scene in Ping Pong Summer we touch on there, and much, much more. So now you have the background here, okay? We met, obviously, you know where we met, you know how we became friendly. We've been in touch since. He's been meaning to come on the podcast. We've been trying to figure out the best time. We met in New London, Connecticut a few months ago. We recorded this show then. I'm finally posting now. It's my Thanksgiving gift to you, my listeners. Thank you, and I wish you the nothing but the greatest Thanksgiving, and we'll be back on the other end of this rather lengthy conversation with Robert Longstreet.
Okay,
oh my God, you're a genius.
All right.
Robert Longstreet, the actor, has jerry-rigged a mic stand on top of a coffee urn.
Yes, my coffee looking, craft.
Yeah, a craft, coffee craft.
This
is yours?
Yeah, this movie I've drank. I usually have one cup of coffee. On this movie, I've had two pots of coffee a day, just continuously. Black coffee, iced black coffee.
Just nursing it throughout the day. Mm-hmm. You're still drinking it. It's 10 o'clock right or something.
It is.
And you're still...
Just a little wired.
Well, it's, you know, I was wondering how you kept up the pace you do.
Just telling everybody, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. Well, now finally, with your finally doing this podcast.
You and I have talked, do you know that you and I have talked about this for about 2 or 3 years?
Yeah.
Doing one of these? I know. I've been listening to yours and
you're the
I've
first
been a fanboy.
You're the first actor that I wanted on.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was like I have a list, and like I've got an ongoing list of people I want to invite. So it's kind of like a bit of a bucket list and slash. It just keeps track.
Not
keeps,
bucket. I'm knocking on my head for that. Right. Yeah, no fun.
No, but not you know, but more so just so I don't forget. Like then it runs. So the oldest ones are at the top, the ones I wanted
right.
the most for the longest time.
I'm 80.
At the top.
Did you?
You're 80.
Yeah, right.
And. Most importantly, though, now I can finally do my Septian special. Because
oh, wow. Oh, good.
Just kidding. Because, you know, I've had Owner on a few times.
And you've had Tully, right?
And I've had on Tully.
I only call him Tully in absentia. Uh-huh. I always call him Michael to his face.
Isn't that weird?
I can't call people by their last names or, like, people call Lawrence Levine Larry Levine. I call him Lawrence.
Right.
I can't.
I do that, too, with him. Sometimes, even in certain situations, I refer to him as Lawrence Michael Levine.
Do you really?
I've even inserted a couple of times a name he doesn't have in his, you know, legally. So,
right.
You know, like
Lawrence
Jordan.
Of Arabia, Michael Levine.
Lawrence of Arabia, St. Michael, Abe Levine.
Mm-hmm.
My family are Levines. My father's side of the family are Levines.
Really?
So, yeah, there's a lot of Levines in my family.
So how did Orner know you could act? Because you're so good in Richard's Wedding. I always think about, there's a scene where someone asks you if you're smoking a joint, and you're like, no. And it's like the best comedic delivery in the world. Like, when did he ask you to do that?
Well, you know, the truth of that story, and I hope I haven't told it before on this podcast, but he actually originally asked me to read for Richard, the role of Richard, which, oddly enough, or it's probably why you brought up, Lawrence Levine, Larry Levine.
He did play.
And ended up playing. But first, before he was attached to it, way before he was attached to it, because there's no way I could do a as remotely good a job as Larry.
No, he's so good.
But it is a more straight role. There's not as much comedy in Larry's role. So he got the kind of, even though he's got the lead title part, the titular role, Larry, as Richard, it's actually not as funny. It's more of a straight role. So a lot of the comedic roles are, of course, you know, besides my character, of course, as you know, the guy who owns the apartment.
Yeah, the British dude.
The British, yeah. Right, you know, and also Dustin Defay's role. And,
he's just out of control.
And Randy Campbell and all those guys in the movie. But I, you know, to go back to your question, I really don't know. I don't know what, I never asked him that.
He's
I never said, why did you ask
director.
Me?
Yeah.
And I, well, actually, Karpovsky had a hand in casting that. Not my role, I don't think, because it actually went to somebody else.
Mm.
I was being read for Richard. I forget the guy. He was a producer on the film. Got read. He was going to do Andrew. He dropped out as an actor in it. And so after Ohner had second thoughts about casting me as Richard, he cast me as Andrew because the role opened up.
But that's amazing that Ohner was thinking of you for that big a part.
Yeah.
What made him think?
I don't know.
He's just really great. Yeah. He's just got an eye that way.
I don't know. But this is a show. This is about
I know.
The actor,
I know
Robert
what I'm
Longstreet.
Talking about. But this is also reminding me that I fell in love with Josephine Decker watching Richard's Wedding.
Yeah.
And sent her a bunch of emails and stuff telling her how much that I loved her. And like, not in a creepy way, in a very professional. Well, I'm kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But
well,
I think
so
I was
I.
professional.
Yeah.
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 But that led to her putting me in That Was Mild and Lovely, which is an amazing movie that I'm really proud to be in.
Yeah. And is gaining so much mileage. We
it
just
is.
Had it at BAM Cinema Fest.
Yeah, Richard Brody fell in love with it, which was
so
nice.
He's a big advocate of, of not only Josephine's film, but of a number of films in that that kind of genre.
I need to see Wild Canaries and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually have now Jennifer Prediger is in a movie with Jess Weixler.
They co-directed that, right?
Did they?
I think they did.
Oh,
I think
very
they
possible.
Co-wrote and co-directed.
To quote the contemporary hit by Aretha Franklin and Annie Lennox, sisters are doing it for themselves. I think that might
I'm
be 30
about.
Years old.
Mm-hmm.
No, I want to see it. I'm looking, and I just got a link.
They're both great, too. Those actresses are incredible.
Jennifer. And while we're on the subject, last one I'm going to reference is her boyfriend, Jennifer Prediger's boyfriend, Dan Schechter.
Mm-hmm. I've never met
characters.
Him. Mm-hmm.
He did supporting characters with
Alex
and Sophia Decal a couple years ago. He has a new film with Jennifer Aniston, John Hawkes.
Oh, he's so great.
Timothy Robbins and Mos Def. It's called... It's coming out next month. It's called Life of Crime, adapted from an Elmore Leonard novel.
Wow, that's big time. Yeah.
Leonard gave this guy Dan, the director adapter, gave him the permission right before he died to adapt this movie.
Really?
Based on a screenplay that he wrote on spec. I mean, if you want to call it on spec, this guy Dan directed it. It is so good. Wait till you see it. I'm already saying it's called Life of Crime, and Dan's on the show coming up in a couple of weeks. And everybody in that movie is great, including, I'm happy to say, Jennifer Aniston.
Wow. Wow. Good.
Yeah, so anyway, so you're going to see his career
really
go up.
I love
sure
John
Jennifer.
Hawks. I met him at the Gotham Awards. He's such a great, unassuming guy.
Well, you know,
and
you're
a motherfucker of an actor, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, was he familiar with your work?
No. No. I don't know if anybody is. Do you
well,
know? I'm so under the radar.
Well, I think that's going to change with...
That'd be great.
With this film.
Oh, really?
We're talking about The Missing Girl,
mm-hmm.
which is why I'm here talking to you.
Because it's a lead. It's like one of the few leads that I've had.
Right. I know you were in the... the film you turned me on to?
Sabbatical?
Sabbatical.
Yeah.
You have the lead in that, too.
Yeah, I do.
But this gives you a little bit more...
this one's
that
more
was sensational.
Friendly.
Yeah, that's a difficult film because it's very serious and dark. This film is more dark, but it's dark comedy. It meets...
It's like love story, mystery.
Yeah.
It's a whole bunch of...
It's an
amalgam.
It must be fun.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, I was in such a turndown mode. I turned down a ton of movies. Uh-huh. I have like a 5-page rule. If I'm reading it and if I'm struggling at all, it goes on the heap and I don't care. Or if I see anything that I feel like I've seen before or done before, mm-hmm. which leaves me with my yes pile is just always the weirdest shit in the world, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
But this was... I always try to think of like ways to discount a script, and this like I couldn't I couldn't describe it. I was trying to explain it to Michael Tully in a text message, and I realized it was such a Russian doll. It was so convoluted, mm-hmm. and trying to explain it to him, I fell madly in love with it because I couldn't.
Wow, So it had also become something for you to figure out, too.
It definitely. Yeah.
You know, it's like a challenge for you.
Well, I just, I love things that aren't readily encapsulated. It's mm-hmm. like, that's, I'd love to do that.
Was this before or after Mike Ryan signed on as producer?
This was after. Mike Ryan recommended me to Alex, who's the director.
Right. Okay. Alex Calvo, who is going to be on, too.
Mm-hmm.
I had a question about that. Oh, you can say you don't want to talk about this thing, although I have a feeling you're very open to talking about anything. But
you can ask me anything.
Okay.
I'll tell you anything.
But no, I know that you're considering now, you have not been represented.
No. I've done, this is all without an agent. Yeah.
You've done like how many?
35, let's say you've done, 40. Yeah.
Including shorts?
Including shorts, it's 47 like, or something. I think 47. I've done a lot of, I've put a moratorium on shorts. I don't do
have
them
you?
Anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they show up and they dilute your resume. Mm-hmm. I even wrote a letter to IMDb, which was saying that, you know, that you would really help starting filmmakers, that it wouldn't be this stigma if you put it in a separate category. Mm-hmm. You could probably get big stars that would be willing to spend a weekend on your movie, you know? Mm-hmm. But now they wouldn't because you really have to live with it. I even did a thing where I just phoned in on a short, and then suddenly it's a credit, and then
right, I see.
It was a favor, and now it's the smallest credit I've ever had in my life,
right.
And I wish that I hadn't done that. Yeah.
It was the one in the restaurant.
Oh,
the
no, that's
Cattle
one of my favorite
Baron.
Ones. That, I love that one, Cork's Cattle Baron.
Cork's
Eric
Cattle
Steele
Baron.
Wrote and directed.
Yeah.
That's me and Frank Mosley. I'm really glad I did that.
Oh, yeah. That's so cinematic on a certain level.
Yeah,
like,
I love
it's
that
like
one.
Almost like a feature that just happened to be stripped down to.
It's good. He's such a good writer. Eric is such a good writer.
Yeah. I mean, in such a short time, sitting at the table,
yeah.
What happens between the two characters is
it
great.
Is great. Yeah, Frank is incredible in that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're considering or you're pursuing getting representation
I would
now.
Like to. Now, TV has gotten so good, and it's sort of independent film kind of evaporated. At the great level, at like the $5 to $12 million level, kind of mm-hmm. evaporated, and all those people ran to television. So I would love the television I'm seeing now is not what was stigmatized 10 years ago when I didn't think I wanted to do. I would love to do television now.
Yeah.
And
when
I'd
did you?
To, like,
can
make,
you? I'm sorry.
I'd just love to make money too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
I hear you. Would you remember around the time this where you kind of it crystallized for
it,
you?
It all
remember?
Clicked. I never knew what to do. In my 20s, I was so intimidated by all of this mm-hmm. that I couldn't, if you sat me down in front of an agent, I would just dissolve. And I couldn't, even when I was studying, it took me a year not to be afraid of Uta Hagen. It took me 3 years to learn anything in that class because I was so terrified.
Was she the teacher?
Yeah, I studied.
You studied under Uta Hagen?
With Uta Hagen for
you
three
did?
Years. Yeah.
She was married to Herbert Berghoff.
Herbert Berghoff,
right?
At the studio.
Right.
Yeah.
And
they were incredible. I mean, she didn't believe in, like, so many of these acting classes just rip off actors, and mm-hmm. actors are so broke. Mm-hmm. She was $60 for 11 weeks. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah, she was great, but she was terrifying, but taught me everything.
Yeah. Yeah, when was that?
That was in, it was probably 86 to 89, I think.
Okay. Was that here? In, the
in New York.
Was
I lived in New York for a while.
You did? Yeah, yeah. I was thinking you had
in
to.
In the 80s, early 80s when New York was really great and funky.
I lived there. It was,
yeah,
it was, right, where you could get mugged, you know?
Oh, you definitely could. And I lived there in a midnight cowboy apartment on 96th Street on the west side.
Oh, you did?
I lived all over Jersey City, the East Village, the West Village.
In that short time, of course, yeah. I understand. Yeah, there's a variation on an available couch, something a little bit more elaborate, but not much more, that was available for 6 months.
Oh, was it?
No,
oh.
I'm thinking, like, you know, when you're broke and you're an actor.
Oh, yeah.
And you are wanting to live in New York, your living quarters could be a palace or a...
They can be disgusting.
Or you can live on a used...
Yeah. Well, mine was beautiful. When I lived with a girl, I lived with a girl for 7 years, and we lived in Jersey City, and we had half a brownstone, so we had chandeliers and fireplaces in every room and like 13-foot ceilings and big windows, and it was a duplex with this round wooden staircase that went, so that was beautiful. But
palatial.
Then when I got single, I was like destitute again. Yeah. And I didn't care.
You had the dumpster behind
it. That was exactly what it was like. Yeah. Uh-huh. But so to get back to, I had no idea what to do, and then 5 years ago I just started writing directors that I admired, independent directors that I admired, and sending them all letters and saying, I would love to work with you. And once I did Great World of Sound, Craig Zobel's movie,
yeah.
I had something that people had seen, and so I could use that in the letters that I wrote. And then I guess all those chits came in, and I cashed them in starting in 2009. I did that in 2007, but started working regularly. It hasn't been that long. For the past 4 years, I've worked as much as I want to, just from chasing filmmakers.
Right.
And Sundance has been beautiful to me.
Yeah.
They've been incredible.
Yeah, well, I remember, what was it, 2 or 3 seasons ago?
2011, I had 4, which broke the record for men.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Johnny Mars is...
Johnny Mars.
...is right, sitting right beside me on that throne. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe the following year, he might have had...
I think
2012, he might have had, like, 4 films.
I think he had 4 there. Yeah. I don't know if it's... Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't know what the criteria was, but...
Yeah. And then in there's a couple of films. I mean, like, for instance, Gimme Shelter.
You Take Shelter.
I'm sorry. Take Shelter.
That's okay.
That's okay. It's getting late. I'm tired.
I
love that.
No, me too. I couldn't think of Mick Jagger. I was just going to make some joke about Mick Jagger and Jeff Nichols, but I'm too tired too.
To come up with it.
I was like, fuck it.
No, I'm just going to. We got to do this when we. Let's stop. Shelter.
Mm-hmm. Let's just do some cocaine and just turn this back on again.
Take Shelter. Yes. That was kind of like just pretty close to flying close to the sun in a way.
That's definitely one of the best movies I've ever been in.
Yeah. Right. But it was also, as big, most exposure, I'm sure.
I think, I had been in little teeny things in big movies, but was the kind of an indie darling.
Right.
That I've done a bunch of indies that have just disappeared, but that one, like, really, that got kind of noticed, and it was in Jessica Chastain's canon of amazing, like, she did, like, 7 movies that year.
Yeah. Right.
She was so sweet that year talking to me about my 4 movies at Sundance and how incredible that was and being so complimentary, and I was like, what have you done? And she, like, rattled off 7 that were, like, Terrence Malick. And
right. But, you know, one can recognize you often. You know, in your films, she really disappears. Not saying you can't, but, you know.
I've got some chameleon.
You're
things,
kind of like but you're kind of a leading man within character roles. You're more of a leading, it's like Robert Longstreet.
I love that. That's kind of what Tully says. I'm a character actor with star power. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. I see it. Also, there's something that used to exist, like in the John Ford Westerns. There were personas ahead of their characters, so these character actors that would work in these films over and over, they didn't really modify those. But I'm not saying that's what you do.
Yeah.
But that does exist. Used to exist with character roles. I don't think people allow that to happen too much anymore.
I don't think so. I don't know if I have a personality that readily.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No.
And you should probably cut that star power thing out. I was just thinking that sounds stupid. That sounds egotistical. That's not true. Right. I don't think of myself that way. Yeah, I'm a character actor with star power. How are you? Yeah. No, that sounds awful. Yeah.
Well, you're on, you know, as you said, about a gallon of coffee. So.
Yeah, well, that's totally true. Yeah, I fall in love with myself with enough caffeine. Yeah,
exactly. Do you have a trouble with that? You know, or do you struggle with a certain level of self-hatred? Or in doubt?
Constantly. Like in what context?
So I guess I mean like when you... or on the set, or you're watching yourself, or that kind of thing.
Oh, I'm riddled with insecurities. The weird thing is like, there's some things I prepare for, some things I don't, and I'd like to be ill-prepared. Like, I don't... Sometimes on the first take, even a really character-y role, I'll find out how they move, how they sound, which is, like, a high wire act that you can fail at. And I'd literally sometimes... am rolling around at night, the first night before shooting, going, okay, can I say that my grandmother died? Can I say that, like, I have an illness and I need to go? Like, what can I do to get out of this film and not ruin it and no one will be mad at me? I think I'm going to fuck everything up that I do.
Right. You have an out plan, or what's the term? You have, like, an escape plan.
It's like being 20 again and trying to figure out an excuse to not go into your waiting job. You know?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say into your waitress.
Oh, no. Oh, well, of course. Well, I did waitress once in a diner, and it was sad. Yeah.
Waiter.
Crotchless and ugly. Oh. No, but the way that I used to get
I was thinking about going into that date where you think you might get laid. And then that you get the cold feet for that the night before.
Oh, like, God, of
and
course.
You're like, you know, performance anxiety and all.
Oh, terrified of that. Yeah, but I like, I have tons of insecurities about that kind of thing. And acting just amplifies them. I've gotten used to looking at myself and stuff like that, but.
Right.
Yeah. But I always think I'm going to fail miserably and have 100 people staring blankly at me, just going like, what the fuck is this loser doing? Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
Do you think that's common? Do you hear that from other actors?
I don't talk to, you know, I think that's common only, I think that a lot of actors are taught how to talk about themselves, and there's not a lot of venues, by the way, or outlets for actors to confess this. So in the first place, although, you know, Oprah, I guess.
Right.
Me and Oprah. But
it makes me feel good to hear that. I love to hear.
Yeah, but I think it's very typical, and I doubt that there's many actors who aren't self-doubting and loathing on a certain level, and not that those two things are the same. But, well, I was going to say, first of all, if you do find representation, and, you know, I'm sure you get TV work and all that, and but I wonder if that pile would, you know, that's, you're talking about that special, hard to define pile of God knows what it is, because it's just appealing, that would shift, and maybe how you do talk about yourself publicly would change. You know, these are things that, Robert's not going to look at this script because, you know, there's only so many pages these characters on.
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I do feel like that right now. Like, I'm 51. And so I do, like, I'll look at something and say, like, is this worth my time? Yeah. You know, I really will. Like, do I want to go, like, if it's in, you know, somewhere, it's like, do I want to be that fucking hot for that fucking long and do this, you know?
Right.
It's the silly criteria. Yeah. But I don't know. I'd still want to do stuff great. Like, I can't, I have a few things on IMDb that I really am sorry that I did, and they really bother me. So I think I would still be just as picky, even if it was money. A money thing, and it would have to be a lot.
But
of
my
money.
Point is, you may not even see those things because they've got somebody now who's, who's like, you know, kind of a breach. I mean, that's the opposite of that, rather. That's somebody who's like kind of in the way.
Oh, saying no for me.
Yeah,
I would not like that.
Yeah,
I really don't. I hate being the middleman. I really do. Mm-hmm. It would have to be a unique relationship with like it's. I always feel like. It's like, I just want to talk to the director. I just want to talk to the production. I don't want, like, this back and forth. But I'm a terrible negotiator.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a people pleaser.
Yeah.
But I'm actually a bitch. Mm-hmm. And there's some things that I really don't want to do, and there are ways that I really want them. And now I'm having to lay it all out. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, talking on the phone, I tell people, I'm going to send you one very nasty, not nasty, but just really
direct.
Just pat direct email about like what I'll do, what I want, what I expect, what I want. And
this is your kind of a version of your writer and your the writers you have. And
exactly. You know. And it would be better to have somebody doing that because I'm not.
Right. And they could probably get more effectively and get, like, you could take care of all of the things, even things that you don't think about.
I would love that, because I like just coming in and being nice and not having to do it. But I would love for somebody to fight to tooth and nail and be like, fuck that, you get that.
You want the bulldog.
I do.
Person.
I want a shark.
Yeah, a shark. Well, and then you can come in and just look pretty like a dude. What? I don't know.
So pretty. I didn't say it had to be a Mercedes.
Right. I don't need the river view.
Yeah,
this
no.
Time.
Are you kidding? That's a lot of per diem. I certainly wouldn't have. Yeah.
So now we know you had this period of time in the mid to late 80s in New York, but you're from North Carolina?
North Carolina.
You are from North Carolina.
I was born in North Carolina, and I've gone back to Wilmington. Like, I've probably lived in North Carolina until I was 6, and then moved back there when I was married. And then when I was divorced, I moved back there. So I've lived in North Carolina probably 16 years, but I've also lived in Massachusetts. I really grew up in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
You did?
From 6 to about 16.
What was the reason for that? My
folks moved there, to Boston. My dad was a broker, a stockbroker.
Okay.
And they were, my dad's side of the family was... In Boston, they were bankers. Like, my grandfather was president of New England Merchants and president of the Science Museum and on the board of Underwood and all this. Like,
wow.
They were, like, Brahmin. That was the end of, like,
was
big money. And
they call that, like, the Boston Brahmin type people.
It was something. They were.
Was Marblehead was wealthy?
Beacon Hill. Marblehead was really wealthy. Yeah, we weren't. I mean, we were very middle class growing up. But there were older relatives in our family that were the last of that ilk.
I see. Uh-huh. And so you lived mostly in Massachusetts.
Yes, mostly
Boston
in Marblehead,
area.
Which then, I hated.
Right.
It was a really preppy town, and I was non-athletic.
Did you know back then that you were destined to be in the arts?
I was making super great movies when I was 10.
Were you?
Mm-hmm.
With your friends from school?
With my friends, a couple of my friends, yep. Mark Gamble and David Clemson, friends of mine. Mark Gamble is somebody I reconnected with on Facebook, and it was great to
talk relation to Randy.
Again. No, he was actually the... No relation to Andy.
They're from North Carolina, too.
Are they really?
Randy, who was in The Wedding, and his brother Herbert is a friend of mine.
Yeah, no, this Mark is from Massachusetts. He's actually the son of our minister at that time.
Oh, okay.
And we shot a movie in the church, and then I remember he told us, he saw like all the blood that I was doing in one scene, and he was like, yeah, no, I really don't think you should be taking down the crucifixes and doing the stuff that you're doing in here. And so we got kicked out of the church. I was always...
You mean physically thrown out, or you were excommunicated?
No, very kindly excommunicated, yeah. Because I loved blood. I loved horror movies. I would make horror movies and copy Monty Python.
And so early 70s, were you, or late 60s?
Oh, God. Our beautiful cinematographer just showed me her breast, and it was really lovely.
Oh, you're lucky.
It was really, really nice.
Was it?
Yes, it was perfect. God, that was... really nice.
That was a little
that
favor
was a little
thrown
present.
Your way.
That was a stocking stuffer.
Literally. So you were making, and you were interested in horror. Even you were exposed to the movies so much. You saw some stuff on TV.
I saw some stuff on TV, and
what kind of movies were you watching growing up?
Well, my mom took me to cool independent. She took me to Harold Maud when I was 10 or something
that.
Yeah, and took me to...
That's very cool.
And foreign movies. We went to foreign movies. Mm-hmm. And what else did she take me to that was just incredible? And my dad would pick the films for the yacht club, you know, which is really funny, but he picked...
It's funny coming out of your mouth.
Paper Moon, the...
Peter Bogdanovich, right?
Yeah, which... Mm-hmm. And now that's my favorite movie. Paper Moon and Coming Home are my
Is there anything better than Madeline Kahn and...
No. No.
Paper Moon.
Do you like that? Do you like Mickey the Mouse? Oh, son of a bitch. No, it's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is when sad. Yeah.
And her trying to connect to Tatum O'Neill.
That's so great. Yeah. Aren't you that chick who sat up front with her big tits?
Yeah.
And this is not an impression. I'm just remembering.
No, no. Yeah. Yeah.
You actually do impressions, right?
I can do a couple, but I don't do impressions per se.
You do. You did a Walter Matthau today that was really good.
Oh, that's funny.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to do it right now?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm on the spot. I occasionally will throw it in, or it'll just come out like...
Yeah.
All of a sudden, something strange will come out, and it sounds like Christopher Walken or something like that.
Oh, do you do one of those? Do you do him?
I was just saying something like, fellas. No, it just doesn't...
No, that's
right
close.
Now,
that's
I'm tired. No, it's not. It's not. But, some weird ones. Well, I have just odd ones. You know, but those are often the most fun.
Yeah.
Like I could do James Mason.
Oh, can you?
Lolita, don't play with his dirty boys.
Oh, God, that's really fucking good, dude.
Quilty, where are you, Quilty? You
know, that's really good.
I could do that when I was like 11.
Really?
I used to do impressions.
You and Matt Damon, yeah.
Oh, that's right, he does them too, right?
Mm-hmm. But he does
Kevin
a really
Spacey.
Good James Mason. Yeah.
Oh, he does?
Do you do Kevin Spacey?
No, but Kevin Spacey does.
He does, yeah.
Yeah. I could, I don't know what it was. I was fascinated with you know, voices always. And I was brought up around music too. So I had an ear, I guess, for imitation.
You definitely do.
So I could, family gatherings, they would say, do John Wayne. And I was like, you know.
Do you do John Wayne?
No. But I mean, you know, it was amusing to watch it, like an 11-year-old kid trying to do John. Well, listen, Pilgrim. Well, I'm not going to hit you, mister.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Like hell,
as a young gay John Wayne,
kind of. Well, I always had my feelings. Like there was this thing where he would do, "Okay, fellas,
right,
let's go." Oh. Like I kind of felt there was this.
You're right.
Slight,
there is
when
a
you
little
would walk,
silhouette
there was a little bit
in
of
there.
A,
yeah,
a little bit. Right.
God, what a queer.
Giddy up.
Right.
So I was doing, and I would do also like Betty Davis, things like that, which
wow,
was kind
really?
Of also kind of a little bit.
gay, right?
That's startling.
But I didn't mind that.
The parents don't like...
Yeah, that made people uncomfortable.
They're like, oh,
but
God.
I could do, but it was sometimes just a gesture, you know. It wasn't necessarily much more than... And that's usually how you would get somebody, right, when you're doing... If you're trying to learn some impression, you just get one little essence of, like, you know...
I just got an idea of, like, you know how kids get paid to do the lawn for their...
Yeah, right.
Their lawns. They're just like, give them $5. I'd tell them not to do Betty Day.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Give them, disincentivize him.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, Jesus.
But, so that's it.
That's good.
No,
Mason was talented.
Oh, that one I, for whatever reason, that's one I just managed to get. Like, I have that voice. I could get that voice.
That's
down,
great, though. You know? Yeah.
And I loved him as an actor.
He's incredible.
James Mason.
Yeah.
He was this, you know, sophisticated, very handsome, you know, smart guy, mm-hmm. and great actor, yet had a level of vulnerability that was so unusual, you know, like whether it was in Lolita or what's the one where he's an alcoholic and...
Oh, God, I
forget
can't remember.
It's like a very Douglas Sirkish kind of film.
Mm-hmm.
He plays an alcoholic and... he's trying to quit. It's a little bit over the top, but he's very good.
I should go on and James Mason binge, actually.
And also, of course, in...
I love him in Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, yeah. Here Comes Mr. Jordan, right? Oh, no. You mean the remake with
in
Warren
remake
Beatty.
With
yes,
Warren
of course.
Beatty,
yeah, he is great in that. You know, with Buck Henry and him.
Yeah, they're incredible. Those two. Yeah.
Yes. And, yes, and I forget. That's right.
That's so good.
He's so good.
What was the name of Warren Beatty's character in that? The Joe?
Joe. Yes, Joe. Joe.
Yes, yeah. Joe. Yes, Joe.
Oh, God. See, that's so fucking good.
Also a little less than that, too.
I had a great experience. I was at Carrie Fisher's house.
What?
Buck Henry. I was looking across at Buck. This was a surreal
night.
Come on.
You did not.
No, everybody was there. I went to the bathroom. Sharon Stone walks out of the bathroom. I was sitting with Robert Downey and Shirley MacLaine and... God, who's like...
What the hell is...
Who's married to Tom Cruise?
Nicole Kidman?
Nicole Kidman.
The first...
But I sat with Shirley MacLaine and her, and we talked about cake, and I was like, why? I like driving home from that party, I was like, why the fuck didn't you ask her about Hal Ashby? Are you out of your mind?
Yeah, yeah. Like, oh, you mean being there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she's in Being There, and Hal Ashby's my favorite director in the world.
Me too.
I mean, that, Coming
Me too.
Home.
Well, Harold and Maude.
Harold and Maude.
Yeah.
Are just like, Coming Home just kills me.
Yeah.
I can't believe that movie. But anyway, so Buck Henry... was standing across staring at me. He took a card out of his pocket, rubbed it on Carrie Fisher's breast, and then put it back in his pocket while never breaking eye contact with me. And I was just like, all right, Buck Henry just did that to Princess Leia, and I'm here, and like that's the best fucking
that's
thing
the
I've ever seen.
That's the funniest story I've ever heard.
It's a beautiful one. Yeah.
I love Buck Henry.
So do I.
Now, I mean.
Yeah.
No, I've always loved Buck Henry. And I used to wait for him to... He would the first bunch of seasons of Saturday Night Live, he was a regular host on that show.
God, I don't remember
that. Yeah, the original cast, and he would, I think he may have been like always the first episode, I could be wrong, the first episode of every season with, again, the first 4 or 5 years. But he would host it, and then every movie he's been in, they're just brilliant. He's just so...
Him and The Graduate as the teller. I mean,
oh my
it's
God.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I love that movie. You know,
The Graduate. There was I had a stack of. There was a time where they weren't laser discs, but you slid them in.
Yeah,
you slid them into a player. They were kind of, but they were in a sleeve. And I had the stack of it. It was Midnight Cowboy. It was Sharky's Machine. This weird Burt Reynolds thing that he directed. That's actually great.
It was like a detective movie, right?
Yeah. Deliverance. Harold and Maude.
Good comedy there. Deliverance.
A bunch of these, and The Graduate, and I probably watched every one of them 50 times because I had them in my college dorm room.
But you could also because they offered something the 50th time. They were still offering stuff.
It's so true. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing with a lot of movies today. Even ones you walk out, feel, oh, that was really good. I feel good about that.
Utterly
movie.
Utterly disposable.
But they're disposable.
Yeah,
in many cases.
They're food. They get digested.
Yeah, but actually, a couple that you're in are not. One I want to bring up that I've gotten much pleasure watching multiple times, including Aseptian, which is where I met you.
I love that movie so much.
And I also really enjoy Cataclysm.
I do too. And I've heard a lot of people have said they've watched that numerous
multiple times.
And that's Todd's writing. Todd's writing is just great.
Yeah. But, you know, because there's so many unique... I had the same experience. You're not in the comedy, but I also was
I wish I was. Rick Alverson's someone I'm chasing.
Yeah.
I have a whole list of people I'm like, chasing after.
Sounds like me, but you prefer this.
Yes.
But you're, it's more exciting.
You and I both do sycophancy really well.
What?
We do sycophancy really well.
Well, it's polite persistence, too.
Right.
And I mean, it has to be authentic. Emails. I mean, that's very, who wouldn't be, like, why wouldn't, if I was a filmmaker and I got an email from you saying, you know, I really respect your work, you know, here's my film, I, you know, consider.
Right.
Think about me next time you're put, you think I might come in handy or so, or whatever. I mean, I would be very honored or, you know, pleased to get such an email.
See, that's so great. Yeah.
Who wouldn't be?
I would. It has to be authentic. Like, I have actor friends now who have approached me just from, you know, wanting to know how I chase filmmakers or things like that. And I'd go out to breakfast with them. Lindsay Wolf, a girl who just wanted to figure out my secret.
Who's Lindsay Wolf?
Lindsay Wolf is an actress in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just starting out. I think she's been into it for like 5 years or mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. But we've become really good friends. And it was just from her taking me out and doing like the formula that I did, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
She wanted to know how I was approaching these filmmakers.
Are you okay with like just sharing all that, your
I'm
trade
fine.
Secrets?
Yeah, because I really honestly believe I don't understand how anybody thinks one actor is in competition with another. It's completely unique DNA. Human beings are just like unbelievably different. There's no such thing. Mm-hmm. Unless it's an utter doppelganger of me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see, you know, you can say like, okay, this actor, he and I guess we're sort of the same casting. Mm-hmm. But I feel like as an actor, you're in competition with yourself. It's never anybody else
mm-hmm.
at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's such a waste of time. I want everybody to do great, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And I know we've talked before about the fact that you're self-doubting as once you have the script, but you occasionally, I'm sure, get turned down or ignored or, you know, you don't get the reply or you're
right.
passed over.
Really rarely.
Whatever.
Really rarely do people not reply. Like, I can count on, there's only two directors I've written that haven't responded. Which is really funny.
We can mention them because they probably not said yes to my show.
Want to mention these fuckers right now? Yeah.
Yeah. Because they probably, you know, also didn't want to come on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So Richard Linklater is a bastard.
Is he a bastard?
No,
did he not want to come on the show?
No, I'm just so totally teasing because
I
would love to have him on. But actually, I'm waiting out when he's not busy with that. That'll never happen. But
you might have to go down to Austin to interview him.
I will do that.
Yeah.
I'll make a special trip.
But,
you know,
so
for me, it's worthwhile because I don't want to do it during the festival. And I don't want to do it right as he's
right
coming with has a film and he's doing the press thing because it's best to get them in a period where it's just, you know, they're busy, but they're not in a cycle of that. So they're fresh to talk about all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I'm looking to do.
I need to chase him, too. I want to chase him bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like he's great.
Somebody like that. You know, there's like, you know, there's a few people.
Have
like
you had
that.
William Friedkin?
Yes.
You have? You yes. talked to him?
Yes.
He's a raconteur. He probably burnt your ear for an hour.
Well, no. I had him. I did a phone call with him, and this is about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it was right as he had this most recent
Killer Joe.
Killer Joe.
Yeah.
Which you weren't in somehow.
I wish I was. I've emailed with him.
Okay. Yes,
I got to tell him how much I love The Exorcist, which was incredible. To
well,
me.
Listen to this episode because I know you've listened to a few here and there because. What happened was with William Friedkin, and again, he also had the book coming out, the memoir.
Oh, wow. All right. I need to read that.
He signed because I subsequently did meet him. There was a William Friedkin retro at BAM, and he did a Q&A which is one of the best Q&As I've ever seen.
What's he like, 80 going on 13?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Incredible.
He's very youthful and looks 20 years younger than his age.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. But then again, Mazursky looked younger than he was, too, I thought.
God, I love Paul Mazursky.
Yeah. But Friedkin, just to finish that, so he came and I introduced myself, and then he signed my book, and I lost it.
No.
Yeah. But I have his secretary's, you know, information, so I'm going to get another copy.
Call her up and demand it. Yeah.
I'll get another copy. But I want to have him on for
you should.
A longer time. But I got him on the phone. He was great. I said, look, I'm not even going to talk about, I'm not going to talk about the French Connection. I can't even bring it up because I would not be able to talk about anything else.
It's a whole meal in itself.
I need like 2 hours just to talk about the French Connection. It's one of my top five. I would. That would. You mentioned your little pile that you took to college. Yeah. That would be in mine. You know, it's like
Sorcerer's in mine, and The Exorcist.
Well,
yeah.
That's the movie that I saw. The Exorcist, Sorcerer.
Sorcerer's on the crap.
You know, yeah, it is.
Sean Baker wrote a great thing, and they connected over that. William Friedkin was really touched with what Sean Baker wrote. Yeah.
Yeah, the filmmaker, Sean Baker.
Mm-hmm. Who did Starlet.
Yeah, Starlet. I know, I saw that. And he didn't come on. That was a hard one.
Really?
Brigade, no, I don't even think he probably knew
that.
I guess he wasn't doing much press. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
He's too handsome for radio.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So Friedkin was on the phone, and we were talking about, again, I couldn't talk about French Connection. I love the movie, but at a point I said, you know, when I was a kid, I remember the radio reports about the audiences coming out of The Exorcist and how people were having nervous breakdowns and how they were getting sick in the theaters and people were, just fits and all this stuff. And he goes, oh, that was widely over, that was widely exaggerated because, the radio... the media overdid that were very few, there was nobody who was having nervous
breakdown.
Right,
you'd have to be psychotic.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. But he did say, and I said, but it wasn't the movie studios. They were not in collusion with the media making, trying to use that
right.
to get audiences.
Even though you can't buy propaganda.
Just some of the media were, that was one thing. And then he went on, this was right after the school shootings.
Mm.
Where these kids were, well, these really little kids were killed. I can't remember, it was a playground or something, whatever it was, that it wasn't just like high school kids, which is, of course,
fucking cowards.
I know. And he just went off on this thing about evil in the world. And, it's a common thread through his films, grappling with evil and whatnot. But it was like this thing, you need to listen to it because he goes off.
To.
And I made an editing error where I used Tubular Bells, is that the name of the song?
Yeah, God, Mike Oldfield.
And
haunts my memory.
When
now.
I edited the show, I fucked up somewhere, and it came on too soon because I was going to do it like as a fade out.
Dude, this is why you lost your book. This is why you lost your book, Adam.
Do you know what happens? So while he's talking about evil, all of a sudden in the background, all of a sudden you hear Tubular Bells. It sounds like I'm mocking him.
God,
by playing.
Great.
No.
Yeah,
so go back if you're listening to the William Friedkin.
Let me just play this little clip for what does this bring for? It's like, stick your cock up her ass, you motherfucking worthless godsucker.
Cambridge, what's her name? Mercedes Cambridge.
Mercedes, yeah, it's Mercedes McCambridge.
McCambridge,
and
rather.
She even did like the.
On cigarettes. Yeah. So good.
Like that stuff. Like, and I couldn't believe that's all she did. She just went like. But she's like.
That's so creepy.
Yeah, that movie, there was never sound like that. My father took me to that when I was 11.
What?
I begged him for 2 weeks, and finally he was like, fuck it, get in the car, let's go. And so
this is your father, the banker?
My father, who actually had ecclesiastical robes in the attic, because he was going to be a minister. But then I was the shotgun at their wedding, it was time to make money.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and so
you
he became
it, you
a
knocked
businessman.
Knocked up your mom?
They met when he was in the seminary. Yeah. At college, yeah.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I'm sure it wasn't for your parents at the time.
Semen with seminary. And,
that's what you get.
Yeah. But so we went to The Exorcist, and it was during the cross scene where he turned over to me, and he was just like white as a sheet, and he was like, do you want to get out of here? And I was like, I didn't even say a word. I just like emphatically shook my head up and down. Yes.
Yeah, like this
and
was a big mistake. We both know it.
I was just like, what the fuck? Like I felt like, and it was exactly like what I told William Friedkin in the email. I was like, that was not a film experience. Mm-hmm. That was like watching a tornado take your hometown away.
Right. Oh, wow.
But we went back the very next night and I watched the rest of the movie through a rip in a Hershey wrapper.
Yeah.
Just this little slit in my Hershey. I just never seen or heard anything like that. I mean, it was just...
I saw that movie. I was too terrified to go. And we're the same
flawless.
Age. We're the same age, pretty much.
Are you 51?
No.
I'm way older than you, I think.
Months.
How old are you?
No, I'm 50.
Okay.
So I'm turning 51 in September. Yeah.
Oh, God, that's really old.
It's like when they say, you're so... But you look so young. And then you're saying, but the hidden meaning there is, you're old. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, definitely.
But you don't look old.
I know.
But you are... That's what they mean by that backhanded. I just want people to say, oh, You seem healthy.
You do look young for 50. You look younger than I do. Definitely.
Well,
but I love drugs and all kinds of things like that. Well, I'm chilling out now.
Oh.
Like, I'm way more mature.
Okay.
But I've thought I was 17 since I was 17.
I hear you.
You know? Yeah. About 2 years ago. Or maybe 6 months ago.
Well, next month.
Right.
But, definitely when I'm 60.
But also, it's like the time.
William S. Burroughs. At a certain point, they probably told him not to stop because it would probably have killed him.
Might be true. Like the withdrawal of like an 80-year-old junkie.
No, you can't stop. You can't stop.
And who would? Like when I'm 80, I'm going to start smoking cigarettes again. Yeah.
Well, you have to stop to start.
I think so. Well, I did. Well, I'm not smoking.
Oh, gotcha.
I haven't smoked a store-bought cigarette in 6 months.
Oh.
But I am rolling joints of green tea. I'm opening up tea bags and rolling cigarettes. Yeah.
What about, did you do the e-cigarette?
I did, and I just have a feeling that that's not checked out. I think that's going to be bad.
Okay.
I think they're going to find out that vapor is really shitty. Worse than cigarettes, I think.
Okay.
That's how all this stuff goes, right?
Yeah, usually.
They're just like, oh, it's really great, and everyone's like, oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, it's not FDA, never.
And then the babies are born with the third limb sticking out of their back and stuff.
Wait, say that again?
Then the babies are born with the third arm sticking out of the forehead or something like that.
Exactly. It's not mercury. It's vapor cigarettes.
Anyway, just to finish this.
They're born smoking vapor cigarettes with a girl's spine, right?
The Exorcist, which ties in nicely with this current conversation, too. I saw it when I couldn't see it. I was so terrified to see it as a kid because of those reports I heard that it wasn't until I was in my late 20s. I was working in a summer camp in Vermont. In the middle of the afternoon, I was in one of the sheds, because I was actually worked with, like, they had video equipment. And they had a videotape that somebody had.
Betamax must have been.
No, it was a VHS, but it was somebody had made a copy of the movie. And the TV that I was watching was a small monitor, like literally like 6 inches by 6 inches. And I'm watching The Exorcist on the crappy, like second generation videotape.
Right.
On this tiny screen in a cabin in the middle of the afternoon in Vermont. In the summertime with the sun and people walking around.
Doesn't matter.
And I was watching this thing and I was fucking freaked out by how scary it was.
It's horrifying. And the other, and you mentioned broad daylight. That's what's so terrifying about that movie to me. That cross scene is during the day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
That movie, I just like, it's hats off to all the actors and particularly Ellen Burstyn. And like Linda Blair's off the chart. Like that's just so impossible what she pulls off as a kid.
Yeah.
But Ellen Burstyn is the witness and she tells you how scared you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
She makes that movie horrifying.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, William Friedkin was said that he went too far with
Ellen Burstyn?
No, with the other movie you were just talking about.
Sorcerer, excuse me.
Where he, you know, was putting people's lives in jeopardy.
Was he?
Because that bridge scene where the trucks are going over
that's
the bus.
Unbelievable.
That was like, they really were putting the actors in peril during these scenes.
That's insane.
And then also,
truck weighed like a pound. It was a real truck on the bridge like
that? Yeah. Apparently he also just, during the course of that movie, he was maniacally getting people to do stuff and went over, and also budget and all these things, like just
as long as they don't kill animals, I don't care.
Right.
But the people, that kill
people
make me
are
so
volunteering
mad.
To do it.
Right.
Nobody's forcing them to do it.
But God, the 70s were so irresponsible and insane.
And great movies came out of that. But then he does it again with Linda Blair. I mean, she was a child.
I know.
And I don't see how anybody would have agreed, but he's like, I got this movie to make and I'm going to fucking make it. And you know, this kid is going
to. But I think, like, you look at, like, the pictures and you hear some of the depictions of, like, what it was day to day. I think they had, like, a sweetheart relationship.
Maybe.
You know? But it's...
She did do Exorcist 2.
It's questionable. Yeah. Hmm. Poor thing. I know.
But John Frankenheimer is at the helm, right? Was it John Frankenheimer?
God, was it John
Maybe
Frankenheimer?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Then
Maybe
that's not that big a step down if it was John Frankenheimer.
No,
that,
maybe, like, I could be wrong.
But why? I guess just, like, but those movies are perfect.
Yeah.
It's just leave them the fuck alone. It's like, is someone... Oh, they did. They did try to remake Wizard of Oz, right? With the James Franco thing?
Oh, that was like another Frank Baum book, but like, it wasn't. I don't think it was. It was not the same story.
Like Willy Wonka? Are they out of their fucking minds?
Yeah, shame on them for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Especially Tim Burton.
he's kind of shocking. Great in his own right. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah, but he's gotten that's but like Gene Wilder, what he does now.
Are you kidding me? That performance?
I know, the great Gene Wilder. And I'm dreading the next couple of years because we just lost Eli Wallach, and now
I know
Gene Wilder is up there, and he's not well.
I don't think he is.
No, I saw him not long ago.
Did you?
He's 80-ish, but he
Dick Cavett just interviewed him, didn't he?
Did he?
I think so. I think they did a great interview. Yeah.
But Gene Wilder is somebody who I've always loved, and I met him once or twice, but the last time I saw him, he was doing a talk at the 92nd Street Y in Manhattan, and he seemed very confused and not well.
Mm.
You know, he wasn't. I couldn't remember. I kind of felt this is so wrong to be putting him out there. And
I agree.
He was talking a lot about Richard. What was nice, he talked a lot about Richard.
Richard Pryor,
but it was something I just thought, you know, we were seeing somebody who was becoming much very feeble right in front of us.
See, I was thinking about that the other day, like when they wheel someone out of the Academy Awards.
Yeah.
It's really nice to feed their souls with that applause and to have those kind of accolades later on. But like you come out shaking in a wheelchair and you just look like an animatronic puppet, it's just really sad.
Yes.
But they deserve that love, so it's a weird, it's a double-edged sword. It's
right.
But the only time that I was ever an extra in a movie, when I lived in the 80s, my first acting job ever was an extra on a movie called Funny About Love, and you can see me cross in front of the camera, and it's Gene Wilder and Christine Lottie are coming down the street, and I'm like, I cross the camera. But it's like, I always forget when I look at those things, it's like, I'll never act with him, maybe someday Christine Lottie. I want her to be in my vampire movie, actually, the one that I wrote.
Okay.
But like I'm actually on a frame of film with him.
That's lovely. That matters some.
It matters to
deal.
Me.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
That's the one where he falls in love with her, right? And he's like, he pursue her?
Yeah, it's not a great movie. And no, Mary but Stuart Masterson something... is his daughter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And she wants him.
Who I love.
He's a widow, or divorcee.
I think so.
And isn't it Christine Lottie, like, young and...
They're having trouble conceiving. Yeah.
Oh, they do get into a relationship, right?
Yeah, but then I think it breaks up when they try to do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Stuart Masterson needs to play Bonnie Bedelia's daughter.
Are they starting to...
I just think they look a lot alike.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know what Bonnie Bedelia looks like now. I hope she didn't fuck her face up.
Oh, right.
Because she's beautiful.
She was.
And these actresses need to age.
Well, like, you mentioned...
Plastic surgery is not perfected. People don't understand. It doesn't look good.
No.
It looks freakish.
Yeah.
It stretches their mouth. They all look like they're holding a clamshell in their mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another Bonnie that I do love recently looks like she's gotten work done in it.
Bonnie Raitt?
Yeah.
That's somebody that I would have never guessed would dive into that pool.
You know, a tuck and a nip. They do it. Even a lot of those, you know, the men do it, too. They're getting a lot of work done. And
like I've read...
Just to keep them youthful looking.
Yeah, if you can, but it's like the joke is that everyone winds up looking like an exhausted 28-year-old.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So maybe just look like a fairly well rested 59-year-old.
It perked my interest up because I read the Frank Langella book Drop Names, and he was talking about Paul Newman and said through keeping himself in shape and intelligent plastic surgery, he maintained his looks and he never looked freakish.
Paul Newman.
Yeah.
Oh, he had surgery?
And so I was like, my ear went like, ding, ding, ding.
He had surgery?
Yeah. I was like,
Newman?
What's intelligent plastic surgery? Maybe I would go in for intelligent plastic. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Well, apparently Bruce Springsteen has done that too.
That freaks me out.
He's had some intelligent.
All right, I don't think you can tell what I'd need to look at him.
No, you can. I mean, he's in he's 60-ish, if not in his early 60s. And if you've seen him recently, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, he said stuff for his hair. Right,
and their eyes and things
eye lift. Tuck.
My mom got an eye lift, and it wrecked her eyes for 5 years.
But
they look beautiful now, but they had to come back to normal.
They had to work.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. Over time, gravity wins over again. But, you know.
She looked surprised for 5 years, and she's beautiful.
Oh, that's, it doesn't surprise me.
Oh, thank you.
Good genes.
Oh, thank you.
Let me ask you a question, though. Why were you at this party with Buck Henry and Carrie Fisher's
My friend
breasts.
Michael Rosenbaum invited me to that. And I got to go to her house twice, and I'd love to go back again.
All right, well.
And yeah.
That time,
and
he's going to fly
scared
in.
He's scared of me when I party, but I'm in a sober phase again. Mm-hmm. So if I told Michael that, I would wind up going to famous people's things again. So I need to tell him. So he'll invite me to fancy parties.
Well, he wants you to be...
He wants me to be... I'm
crazy
I'm a fucking madman.
Yeah.
No, like, you'd, like, yeah.
Or he wants you to be.
He wants me
subdued.
To be. He wants me to be subdued.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
And not embarrass him.
Like maybe Carrie Fisher's party, like 30 years ago. Sure,
it could have been crazy. Yeah.
Could have been.
But there's a lot of people
she
there.
She could have drank you under the table.
I think.
And smoked you.
I don't know if anybody could drink me.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't know. Maybe. Right. Maybe.
Uh-huh. But she was a big.
I like to go to 99. You know?
I got you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's
an
amazing.
I would have loved to because she's so fucking smart. She's like miraculous to have.
Yeah.
Crazy batshit conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but for a while there, I mean, she's back to a certain semblance.
I think
of
she's
sanity.
Calm.
She was mentally, I mean, she's self.
I think
she said
yeah.
she was mentally ill. I mean, so I don't know. But she's
bipolar.
But she's in.
Yeah, or whatever that okay. is. That's such
but she's in,
flavor of the year word.
Yeah. But
she's unbalanced. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So she needs to be carefully helped along to be keep balanced.
Yeah.
So she could do Star Wars 7, which is apparently what she's doing, right?
God, is she really?
They got the original cast. And then
what? Everybody?
Mark Hamill, Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, or all the original cast are I think are in this movie. And there, since it takes place after.
Is Lucas going to direct? Who's going to direct?
After the first the trilogy that you know, Empire Strikes Back and then Return of the Jedi. This is the next story in that. So they're supposed to be older, so they can do it.
That
I guess.
Could be great if they do it.
But
right.
Mark Hamill, you know, he's had a very big career as a voice actor for various cartoons, and
he's amazing. And but, Bob, what's the Kevin Smith movie that he's in?
Oh,
Joe and something and Silent Bob.
Again. Silent.
I don't. That's
again.
Great. Carrie Fisher's in that one too. But okay. Mark Hamill like does a send up of like. He has like a lightsaber with a bong in it. Oh. But he's extraordinary.
But he's I think they're all kind of getting back into shape. That's you know,
as long as it's good.
Well,
like,
yeah.
When you first told me they were in there, all I thought about was South Park when they show like George Lucas fucking Indiana Jones up the ass because mm-hmm. of the third Indiana. There's like raped my childhood, and that's how I like they. George Lucas has made me like Star Wars. I went and saw it 16 times. My brother saw it 50 times. We would ride our bikes like 20 miles mm-hmm. to go see it. They've destroyed it for me. These fucking
because of
movies.
The CGI. But
they're just awful.
Or the new ones. You mean.
The new ones are just like yeah. like I in the. I loved it so much, and now it's in the realm of who gives a fuck.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I
what's not
they,
in
I
the
hope
realm.
They can resurrect.
Well, we talked about some of them, right? We talked about some of the films that were not in the realm.
In the realm of who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
I've been in some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many projects have you got like currently going right now?
I don't.
Really?
This is the first time in years that I don't have.
Is that right?
Like six lined up. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is that unnerving for you or is that
No, I love it because I've gotten really pickier.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
this
yeah.
one, this one, I The Missing Girl I really wanted to do. I really loved it.
Yeah, that's rather my idea was to come in and follow the trajectory of the film. So
yeah, which is
this
great.
This is the first stop.
I have a couple things that it's funny. Like when I think about it, there are actually some.
Mm-hmm.
One that's kind of exciting is Todd Rohl's Sweet Cheeks.
Oh my God!
About
I want to
two
see
kids
that.
Who find a black man's yeah. ass in a mailbox and go looking for the owner, and it's like a, you know, throwback 1939, black and white, 35mm, like. God, is it Our Gang? What is the Little Rascals kind of feel?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So that's going to be... Am I not close enough to this?
Yeah, now it's perfect.
How is this, Adam?
Oh, that's even better.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Ramon. You should listen to that.
What?
These
oh,
are
here.
Super... They pick up, like... It's perfect for you can...
Oh, that's great.
This thing is so clumsy that I hit the when I'm driving. I hit the
I bet
the windshield wipers all the time.
But you hurt your finger. It looks like one of those carpal tunnel things that everyone rolls their eyes at.
It's
but
carpal.
It's but that's a real
yeah.
thing.
Yeah,
your injury
right.
is
it turns
real.
Out carpal tunnel was a hoax.
Is that true? I would believe.
Well,
that too.
The Freakonomics guys did a whole thing on whatever happened to it. It was like a pandemic kind of reaction to it. It was all this overreaction to it.
It's like in the ilk and of hysterical things. Blindness and stuff like that. Very 1920s yeah. bathtub gin disease, carpal tunnel.
So you did Sweet Cheeks, Todd's film.
For Vice Magazine, we did a proof of concept, and they agreed, they liked that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a secret. I don't think that's a secret.
Well, but
he's gonna make that feature. Yeah.
Which feature?
Sweet Cheeks.
Oh, it's not made?
Not made yet. No,
oh, okay.
We just made a test reel.
Oh,
for it,
okay, all right.
Which I hope he posts somewhere because the test was amazing.
Yeah,
that's got Eddie Rouse in it, and Eddie Rouse is incredible in that one.
Who is that?
Sweet Cheeks.
No, but who's Eddie Rouse?
Eddie Rouse is just this incredible black character actor. He was in.
I've heard of his name.
He's in George Washington.
Yeah.
He's in a bunch of movies. And he did you see the short Rat Pack Rat that Todd did?
Oh, that's the
He's
actor.
The star of that
oh,
one.
Yeah. Hey, oh, Eddie, Steve of course. Little. He was also in, yeah, I saw, also he was in
Eddie Ross is
Todd's
in,
last film.
And we're, Eddie Ross in, and I are in Lo and Behold, too, a movie that we made about Katrina.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That never got, it hasn't gotten released.
Okay.
It,
but he was also in Todd's last, you know, movie with
the movie that we shouldn't talk about.
Yeah. No, it was painful for Todd, so.
Yes.
But
that was a nightmare. There were some horrible fucking people that were involved in that.
I heard.
That just crucified. I mean, he's an auteur that you need to leave alone.
Yeah.
And he's fucking brilliant.
Look what happens when you
don't.
You
just let Todd Rohal do whatever he wants to do.
Right.
And you mess with that, and you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Well, yeah. No,
plus, I love him, and I want to kill anybody that ever fucks with him. Yeah. Like, really horribly.
Oh, I'm glad.
Okay.
I would like to be in that camp.
Oh, good. Okay. We'll tie them down.
We want to be in the other one.
Fuck them, kill them, and eat them.
And then That Wast Mild and Lovely. That's coming.
Josephine Decker's.
Yeah, maybe
I hope. I don't know if it's been bought, or I'm sure it will be.
It might have.
Do you think it got bought?
It was just maybe at Mayhem Cinema Fest. It might have.
I hope.
Sorry,
I mean, people
I don't
need to see that.
Yeah.
That's. I was just in love with Josephine Decker.
I know.
I wanted to act with Josephine
Who
Decker.
Who doesn't?
And it was, yeah. I mean, is that ubiquitous? Is everyone in love with her?
I said, I have.
You have acted with her.
Yeah. That's right. I
really want to. Yeah, so you're ahead of me on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. All right, she just directed you, so.
But she's that, like, I did that just because I love her.
Yeah.
I had no idea she was that brilliant a director and that visionary, you know? I didn't, that was a leap of faith. That was crazy, like. Crazy situation. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, just something that I would never do. Like, I went and did that movie for free. I wouldn't do that for anybody. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or just anybody.
Yeah, or just anybody. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And then anything else that has already wrapped or that is kind of in maybe post-production or in the festival circuit? Or
No. I mean,
all right.
No, last year was, what was last year? Last year was, oh, no, that's not true. I mean, I have Ping Pong Summer's out right now.
Right.
Which I have a great cameo in that with
it's beautiful with Amy Sedaris, yeah,
which I love, and Leah Thompson's in that scene, and John Hannah, like all these people that I love and admire. Like, I can't believe I was a freak about Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I can't believe I've kissed Leah Thompson on screen. I mean, that's just blows my mind.
Yeah,
and then there's a movie out, a science fiction movie called The Signal, where I have this incredible scene with Lawrence Fishburne, where we just improvised all night. The script got thrown out the window, and we improvised all night. And the director and the writers love what we came up with and let us do it.
Sounds like a buddy movie or something.
It's a weird science fiction movie.
Okay,
and like we're actually at odds with each other in our scene. But it was just like looking at Lawrence Fishburne coming to do you damage was just like that was a dream come true.
Most of us saw him the first time in Apocalypse Now.
Oh my God, 16-year-old behind a massive gun. Yeah. Never get out of the boat. Absolutely goddamn right. Yeah. Yeah, that movie blew my mind. And then I thought the first Matrix was so good. Like, I don't know if it's been destroyed for people now. I only think of the first one. It probably has been.
Yeah.
But I was working on Fight Club as an editor. I saw the Matrix, called in sick to Fight Club, which I was watching dailies of. I was sitting in dailies every day with Fincher and all these people watching them. And that movie was brilliant. But I thought The Matrix was so brilliant, I called in sick to Fight Club to go see The Matrix again the next day because I couldn't believe what I'd just seen.
It was mind-blowing.
It was. The
Wachowskis.
It's fucking, that movie for the first time was unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been copied like
by
Gap and everybody now.
Everybody.
That was really new.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. I see there's another little chapter in there that I didn't know about, the editing for Fincher.
For Fight Club. I actually went in there. I'd loved Seven so much, and my wife was going to be an accountant on Fight Club because she was a film accountant, and I just went in to be the editorial PA. I didn't care.
Right.
I was like happy to drive film all over town and bring them lunch and sit in dailies.
Yeah.
And, they made me an editor really soon, and then I wished I had. I loved it because the money was so good, but I wanted to just be the PA, have no responsibility, and sit around and talk to David Fincher.
Right.
And they actually, I flew.
And he talked to you like he was open?
Oh,
like
he
that?
Was so great.
He
used to call me dude. I thought he was going to be like really scary, like Orson Welles screaming at everybody and making everybody cry. And he was like, dude, Robert. Dude.
Yeah, well, he just called everybody dude, probably,
but he's,
didn't
but
have to
he's
memorize
like
any names.
Dauntingly intelligent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's, I love David Fincher. But I also got to fly to New York and show it to, is it Peter Biskind or?
Yeah.
Okay, him and Chuck, unpronounceable last name, who did Choke and Fight Club, the writer.
Oh, yeah.
Paul
Nicek or something, whatever his name is, yeah.
But I flew with a secret tape. They flew me to New York.
Oh, really?
In a hotel.
Nice.
And I flew with a secret tape of Fight Club and showed it to a very private screening of Fancy Folks with those two guys who were there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Peter Biskin, he's a Variety, wrote for Variety.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
Hollywood Reporter. Which one did he write for? Emailed with him about coming on the show. Yeah. He's not in New York, so it would have to
time
up. He
did a famous book, too, on film.
Oh, yeah. He did Easy Riders and Raging Bulls. And a few others. But that was, I think, everybody's favorite.
Yes.
It's a great book on the 70s.
I showed it to those dudes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was an incredible trip. They were so nice on that movie. I had a blast with them.
Wow. Great stories.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to do a part two.
I would love to. I'd love to do it again. Cut out all the stuff that sounds egotistical in this, because I'm really not.
Nobody thinks you're egotistical.
I hope not.
No.
Jesus Christmas.
Yeah. So when you step down from this throne that you're sitting on, and he's in a diaper.
I'm pissing on someone's head right now as they're tying my shoe. Yeah, you fucking like, what's the Tim and Eric thing where they go around to they're going around to everybody in their office, and they're like just opening up and pissing all over the people that work for them.
This,
and pissing in their trash cans.
Is this from the, like, the TV show?
Tim and Eric's, yeah.
Show. Or if they're, was that on Comedy Central? Or is
I
that
think
on,
it was on Adult Swim. Or,
Adult Swim? Yeah, had to be. Right?
It's just those guys. I can't believe them. Yeah. I like they're people that I would be nervous to meet, like Tim Heidecker and Eric Wareheim. Like I just they're just I don't I'm a
I was in an elevator because when I had Rick on the podcast,
did you?
I wrote up that we were just arrived at the Tribeca offices at the same time to do the interview there, and I told this to Alexia before, the same anecdote, but
she's so beautiful.
She's.
I saw her walking up the street today. Right. She's smoking a cigarette. She had sunglasses on, and there were three girls in their 20s in the car. And they were like, she's so cool. And I had to relay that to her. You have to tell people shit like that. But she is. She's just luminous.
And
how do you pronounce her last name?
Wrong every time.
I don't know.
No,
what is it?
Rasmussen. I don't know.
Rasmussen?
I have to get it down.
Can we dub it in later?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, Alexia.
Yeah.
Okay, here, Alexia.
Beep.
And that's her name.
Yeah.
Beautiful name.
I do that sometimes. I'll say, let's play the clip from your movie. Right?
Oh, okay.
And that was a great clip.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
It was especially good clip. But with her, I have not met her before, but I saw her in Proxy, and I thought, oh, she's stunning.
I need to see that.
Yes, you do. And it was stunning. She was stunning in that. And the scene she's in at the beginning, it'll scar you.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's like... It's not The Exorcist, but it's terrifying. I thought she was, gorgeous. And then when I saw her today, that was paled. Like, in person, I mean, she's just like, I'm just like trying to keep my cool.
Skin is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know.
She's just like.
Bottle
that.
I'm 90% cocksucker these days. And she pulled up her shirt. And she has this teeny little innie belly button and this olive skin. And I was just like, no, I like that. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, she's beautiful.
Wow.
Is this disrespectful? I don't know. I don't know. People fawning. Who wouldn't want people fawning over them?
I don't know. I don't know.
But she's so fucking talented. Like, we were doing a scene the other day. We were out in the street, and it was really chaotic, and lots of stuff was going on. And it was so easy to just lock into her eyes, and she was completely present. And I felt like it was some of the best acting I'd done in a long time. And it was because I was looking at her.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait to see the outcome of the movie.
I hope people are saying it's good. I haven't seen a bit, which is good. I don't need to see it yet. You're talking about the
Missing
Girl, right?
Yeah.
People have been watching the Russians.
Oh, right. Okay. And they're editing. Michael Taylor's editing as we speak. It's probably ready to go.
A great editor.
They probably had a screening at this theater like an hour ago.
They probably did.
We were chatting.
I know. I'm scared now.
I've kept you way longer than you.
How long have we been talking?
An hour and 10 minutes.
Oh, my God.
So
I have an abortion scheduled.
I was going to say it's
an
hour.
I didn't see.
I was going to say it's an hour and 10 minutes, and I'm going to edit it down to an hour and 20 minutes.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
We do need to do a 2 and 3.
But it's funny because right? It sometimes does work out that way because you put in clips and trailers. No.
And
we barely. I do really believe because we have so many obviously common things.
I would
enjoy
love to. Yeah.
I know. We'll do. We will. Yeah. Now that we've broken cherries,
and we're both like talking into big cherries, big hymens right now. Unbroken hymens.
I call it a clown nose, but hymen,
but a hymen is good.
Is this what a hymen looks like?
I think it's a whale hymen or a gorilla hymen.
I think and hope I only broke one hymen in my life.
I think I broke one without knowing.
I lost my virginity with a girl who lost her virginity.
See, that's beautiful. My virginity was taken by a nine. Slut.
No, I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. No, okay. Oh, nine?
No,
I lost
nine,
it at
like
four.
Yeah.
Well, it was kind of, I broke her hymen with a needle first and then went in.
That's so
like,
rude.
Okay. I know. That's something you can cut right there.
Yeah. No, but I don't think there were, maybe, I don't think there were any other virgins in my past.
But that's great. Like, I didn't, my first experience was not with spectacular. The, yeah. It was very experienced, and I was lying and said I'd slept with 10 people before. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I wished it was loving. I wish it was like fumblings in the backseat of a car with someone
that
I was truly in love.
Not only
but
that, it was
beautiful.
In my bedroom.
That's
and
gorgeous.
I was 17 and she was 16. And we tried a few times unsuccessfully because, you know, she was small. And,
how great is that? Yeah.
So, and then we got real brave and like, grew up in this house. I was on the third floor and there were people downstairs.
Good
were
God.
Flying. They let us like be alone upstairs.
That's so exciting.
And then we finally had success, and they were like, all of a sudden.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The minute you got in.
Yeah.
Right. Was the door locked, at least?
Yeah. No, it was closed. Nobody came in. I was just like, just a minute, please.
Right?
And like, you know, and after about 10 minutes, he got the hint. And this is like a cousin who was like, came up to say hello.
Right.
Because I never came downstairs.
Get the fuck out of here.
And to say hello to him. Like, and he had to go downstairs. I'm sure they, you know. Like, God knows.
Oh, do
like,
you think he knew?
Stupid.
Was this a cousin of yours or something?
Well, he was an adult, but he was, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm
sure, pretty sure he knew that if I was in the room with the door closed with my girlfriend and I couldn't come to the door.
He needs to knock it off.
Then
God, that's creepy. That's kind of yucky.
It is yucky.
You need to call him
back.
Up and tell him what an asshole he is.
Yeah.
I made this girl get on top of me because I was like, that's the position I like. Because I was like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. If
right.
I leave it up to her, this might be all right. It was still clumsy. Yeah.
Okay. This is for, I have to have a second podcast just for you.
Yes.
And
no, I would love one. Yeah.
You should do one.
I would. Yeah, I will. I'll fuck this right here. I'll fuck your microphone right now.
That's the first one. That'll be first.
Okay.
Now I have to remember.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Yeah. It's intended to be slimed. That's
is it really?
Yeah, for sure.
Because you could take these off and wash them, right?
I guess.
You're telling me Orner didn't stick one of these in his mouth?
Oh, that would be an interesting show.
Oh,
you
the
and
two
Orner.
Of us would be maniacal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll do the Septian reunion.
I would love that.
As I keep harking back.
And get Jim, too. Yeah, Jim Willingham.
Yeah.
And Michael. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. The whole gang.
Yeah, and John.
I did actually hosted the DVD release party for Septian.
Were you there? No. I don't know where I was.
You might have been in California.
I should have. There's some things in New York I should have come to. Was it teeny teeny?
You were at the opening, at the New York opening. So
yes, that's true. Yes.
Anyway, Robert, thank you.
Thank you. I hope you
had a good time.
I had a great time.
Okay, good.
This is fantastic. This is a really good interview.
It's a thrill to have you on.
Yay, I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah, all right, so...
Okay, thank you.
Do you mind editing it for me?
No, not at all. Do you want me to? Just cut most of it out.
We're definitely going to have Robert back. I'm going to make this, I think, a regular thing now, if Robert will indulge me. Robert, I wonder if you're still listening, and if you are you going to be going to South by Southwest this year? Maybe we can pick it up there. I got to make a trip out to L.A. I think that's going to happen sometime this winter. I'm going to have to go out to Los Angeles because
But we have still quite a ways to go till the new year, everybody. We have a bunch of great episodes coming up. I think next week, finally, I'm going to be playing that episode that I did with Robert Downey Sr. Now, they're doing a Cinema Family in L.A. is doing a retrospective, kicking off, I believe, with a special night with Robert Downey's junior and senior. So I'm going to put up this episode a few days ahead of that. So if you're listening and you're in L.A., I believe you can go to the Cinema Family website right now, and maybe there's still tickets to this event. So, but I'm going to play this Robert Downey Sr. interview. What a treat to sit with him in his apartment in Manhattan. What a great guy he is, and we had a terrific time. So that's coming up, I think, on the next episode. We have an episode coming up with Chuck Workman, who's the well-known documentary filmmaker. He's got a new documentary about Orson Welles. I also am going to get back together for the third time on the show with Kaveh Zahedi, who is a filmmaker of note, and he's got a new web series that looks great, where I believe he has conversations with people in the film industry, independent film industry. Kaveh is a great guy and a very talented, unique voice in the, you know, independent film landscape. So I'm excited after all this time to have Kaveh back on the show. And the filmmaker who made the movie Black Power Mixtape, he's a Swedish filmmaker. He's back with a new film called Concerning Violence. I think this might be my first Swedish filmmaker on the show. Don't know. Can't be sure. But the film is really incredible, and it's narrated by Lauryn Hill. So there's that too. Wouldn't it be great to bring Lauryn Hill on the show? I love her, and The Miseducation, is that what it was called? Miseducation of Lauryn Hill? Wow, what a great album. I got to dig it out, you know, put some of that music on the podcast. Maybe, you know, we got to worry about the legal aspects of that, you know. Anyway, so folks, okay, enough of me chit-chatting. Have a great Thanksgiving. Have a great holiday with your family, your friends. And if you're sitting in front of the TV, you know, with a reheated couple of slices of pizza in the freezer and you're pulling it out, that you can be thankful too. But if you're by yourself, put on some of my old episodes and, you know, I'll keep you company. It's my pleasure. I'm going to New Jersey and hanging out with some family. But for many, many years, my mom and my aunt would alternate between the two, and we'd go to, you know, they'd each host every other year. And then my mother, in the last few years, has gotten, you know, if you've been listening to the show, my mother has dementia, and it's gotten, she can't cook, she can't remember how to do anything. And so we're going to my aunt's, and it gives her a lot of pleasure because she loves her sister so much. And I will say this: my mother is in a very good spot right now. She's in a very, even though she's lost a lot of her, you know, ability to communicate as effectively as she used to. Of course, she's in a loving place, and she's usually in good spirits, and that's something to be grateful for, I guess, you know. So she still knows who everybody in the family is, and what more could you want from that, I suppose. Yeah, so there you go, you know. So if you have something like that going on in your family, I get it, you know. And I wish you the best holiday, and you know, enjoy the long weekend, and we'll be back after the weekend and hit the ground running with all new episodes. Okay, guys? So, yeah. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll be back after this holiday weekend with all new episodes of Filmworks Radio. Continuing, by the way, to be hosted by me, Adam Shartoff, your host. Thank you so much, and wish you nothing but the best.